This afternoon, we want to continue our study in the book of 2 Samuel as we look at the situation in David's life and how David handled these things and how God worked to deal with the sin in David's family, but also to show grace to David. We left off where Absalom had gotten all of Israel on his side except some of the people that had been loyal to David, some of the people from Judah, and also his 600 men. And so there was a great disparity in the number of men that would be able to defend David versus those that would follow Absalom. Absalom had sought counsel and had been given counsel, as we saw on Wednesday, go by Ahithophel, who had previously been David's counselor, but Absalom had been given counsel to go and attack David right away and overtake and kill David and let the other people flee in fear. However, Absalom didn't follow that counsel. He followed the counsel of David's loyal friend, who David had left behind to counteract the counsel of Ahithophel, and that man's name was Hushai. And Hushai had told him, no, gather all Israel together and take time, and that would give time for David to get away. So we see that David has, as we're coming to the study today, David has taken those that are with him, and he has traveled. He didn't stop and rest when he got to the wilderness, but now he's going to be traveling to the east side of the Jordan River. It's still going to be in what should be Israeli territory, or Israel's territory, up into what it would today be considered the Golan Heights. And in that area, it would be the inheritance of Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh is the area in which David is going to go. It's right across the river in that general area. It's also by the country of Ammon. What? We're in Daniel chapter, 2 Samuel chapter 17, the end of the chapter and beginning with 18 today. So let's begin at verse 24. Then David came to Mahanaim, and Absalom passed over the Jordan, he and all the men of Israel with him. Now Mahanaim was up close to where Saul had established his throne and kingship when he was fighting with David. And I didn't put up the map, and I was going to. But it would be across the Jordan, and it would be north east of Jerusalem. And it would probably be about a couple, 30, 40 miles northeast of Jerusalem is where you'd find the city that David went to. And like I said, this was in the area of what today would be the Golan Heights. And Absalom made Amasa captain of the host instead of Joab, which Amasa was a man's son whose name was Ithra, an Israelite, that went in to Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, sister to Jeriah, Joab's mother. Now, what's very interesting is you're seeing all the leadership in both Absalom's army and David's army. There's interrelations family-wise. So we see that this man is also a nephew of David, albeit the appearance here is that they may not have been married. Doesn't really give us a clear picture in that, but he says he went into her, and this man was this man's son, and his mother was David's sister. And you find that that this sister is referred to also in First Chronicles and also earlier in Samuel. So Israel and Absalom pitched in the land of Gilead. And it came to pass, when David was come to Mahanaim, that Shobi, the son of Nahash of Reba of the children of Ammon, and Maker, the son of Anamiel of Lodabar, and Barzillai, the Gileadite of Rogalim, brought beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and flour and parched corn and beans and lentils and parched pulse and honey and butter and sheep and cheese of kine for David and for the people that were with him to eat, for they said, the people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. And so we see that here is God's provision for David in the midst of all of that's going on, where Absalom is attacking. Absalom is already across the Jordan River, but he isn't up into Gilead yet. But David has been, and his company have been fleeing, and now we see that these people God lays on their heart to bring this. They don't have any stake in the fight as far as, they're not Israelites. They're not from Judah. As you saw, they're from all in that particular portion of the country, and they came to support David. And we see that that's the hand of the Lord. And oftentimes David will bring people that we're not close to, but they're there, and God places it on their hearts to support us. What happened in World War II with the Jewish people? Oftentimes there would be Christians that didn't know any of the Jewish people, yet they would be there to support them and to give them hiding places. For example, Corrie Ten Boom and her family. And there were many other Christians as well that during World War II hid the Jews and helped them to escape to get away so that they would not be killed. And that was provision from the Lord. And God did that. God does the same thing. And I'm sure that there's times in your life where you've had things happen and all of a sudden there's someone there that can help you that you hadn't expected. And that's God doing it. And you can think of many cases where the Lord intervenes on our behalf and provides things that we need. Well, he did this for David. And we see that David and his company are nourished by all of this food and all that these people have done for them. And David numbered the people that were with him and set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. And David sent forth a third part of the people under the hand of Joab, and a third part under the hand of Abishai, the son of Jeriah, Joab's brother, and a third part under the hand of Hittai, the Gittite. And the king said unto the people, I will surely go forth with you myself also. Now, I want you to see the change in David. David hadn't gone forth before. This is what brought all this trouble on, is when David hadn't gone with his soldiers to fight the battle before. That's what all of this mess, really at the heart of this, was when David had stayed behind and sinned with lusting after Bathsheba. And all of that happened. And out of that came, the Lord had said, bloodshed shall never leave your house. This is the result of that, where bloodshed hasn't left the house. His oldest son Amnon was killed by Absalom. Now his son, the next one in line, or apparent in line, Absalom, is attempting to overthrow the throne from David and kill him. And so we see that these are the results. And we said before, sometimes we don't realize how our sin can impact other people. Well, as David is doing this, he sets the three groups of people under his sister's two sons, Joab and Ahishai, and then the third one under Ittai, the Gittite. But the people answered, thou shalt not go forth, for if we flee away, they will not care for us, neither if half of us die, will they care for us. But now thou art worth 10,000 of us. Therefore now it is better that thou succor us out of the city. And what they're saying is, don't go with us, stay here, because you, it doesn't matter if they kill us, but you're our leader, and we don't want them to kill you. Stay here and be the one that will stand for us. And the king said unto them, what seemeth you best I will do. And the king stood by the gate side, and all the people came out by hundreds and by thousands. And the king commanded Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, "Deal gently for my sake with the young man, even with Absalom." And all the people heard when the king gave all the captains charge concerning Absalom. Now, so as they're leaving, he gives the final orders and instructions to these three men that have been made captains over all of his soldiers. And he tells them, deal gently with Absalom. In other words, don't kill Absalom. I don't want him dead. Absalom is his son, and he loves his son even though his son is a rebel and is doing horrible things. His son has really split the kingdom before the kingdom was split. We see that Judah had gone with David, and all the other tribes had gone with Absalom. It's the same split that would come later under David's other son Solomon when he was made king, and his grandson Rehoboam when he became king, and under Rehoboam the nation was split into Judah and Israel. Well, as I mentioned one other time, this is the second time the nation has been split already. They were split during the time of Saul. Judah followed David at that time. The rest of the kingdom followed Saul, albeit they didn't follow Saul to the extent that they're following Absalom. Absalom had deceived the people and had given them false hope and really misrepresented his father. And so the people's hearts had been turned to Absalom. And we see that there's a civil war going on. And it's really within the house of David that the war is going on, but it's involving all of Israel, both Judah and Israel. And so we continue on. Where the people of Israel were slain before the servants of David, we'll start at verse 6. So the people went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was in the wood of Ephraim. Now Ephraim is in the northern portion along the Jordan River. It's north of Jerusalem, and Ephraim would be the main tribe in the northern kingdom. Ephraim was one of the sons of Joseph and Manasseh and Ephraim, and we see that Ephraim is the leading tribe of the northern kingdom. They are the tribe in which the idols were set up and the false altars were placed during the time of Jeroboam when he ruled Israel and begin to take the people into false worship. So we see that Ephraim, that is where the battle is being fought. There were hills, mountains in Ephraim, and there were a lot of woods in Ephraim. Today you go to Israel and the woods are coming back. There was a long time where the woods were all gone because during the time of the when the Muslims controlled that portion of the world, they taxed trees. And so all the trees were cut down because people didn't want to pay tax. And also the Jews were taken out of the land, and so God didn't bless the land. But at this time, there were a lot of trees in the land of Ephraim, which would be where Samaria would also be in the time of Jesus. And so we see that they go up there and they're fighting in the woods. And this is of importance because this is going to result in the battle being won for David where they're fighting. For the battle was there scattered over the face of all the country, and the wood devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. My cousin and I had called me one time, and when we were young we had horses, and we'd go over and visit one another on Saturdays and ride horses. And what we do is we chase each other all day long on Saturday on our horseback, and we go running, chasing each other through the woods. And my cousin called me one day, and he said, "I just wanted to call you and tell you I got to thinking, it's amazing we're alive." And I said, "Why?" "Because you remember how we used to chase each other through the woods, and we're dodging branches, and we're dodging trees, and it's amazing we didn't get hit and killed or hurt." Well, evidently, These people got hit and killed and hurt by trees because it says the woods devoured more of them than the sword. And as they're chasing people through the woods, it's also difficult to move through the woods, especially if you've got thick woods and underbrush. And so there were more people killed by the woods than were devoured by the sword, it says. And verse 9, and Absalom met the servants of David, and Absalom rode upon a mule, and the mule went under a thick browse of a great oak, and his head was caught hold of the oak and was taken up between the heaven and the earth, and the mule that was under him went away. Well, Absalom didn't duck. It wasn't like my cousin and I when we were chasing each other. He got to this tree, and you remember what it said about Absalom. He had this beautiful, long, flowing hair, and he'd only cut it once a year. And when it was cut, it was literally a few pounds of hair. It was a lot of hair. Well, what happened is he's riding his mule through the woods, and he hits the branch. The branch grabs his hair, and he gets tangled in the hair, and the mule keeps going, and Absalom's hanging there. He can't get down out of the branch because his hair is caught in it. And so he can't just drop to the earth and run. And he's caught by his hair in the branch. Well, what's going to happen? Well, it says in verse 10, and a certain man saw it and told Joab and said, behold, I saw Absalom hanged in an oak. Didn't say it, but he was hanged by his hair. He wasn't hung in the fact that he was being strangled, but he was hanged in the fact he could not get away and couldn't move. And Joab said unto the man that told him, and behold, thou sawest them, why didst thou not smite him there to the ground? And I would have given 13 shekels of silver and a girdle. Joab said, why didn't you kill him? You saw him, why didn't you kill him? And I would have rewarded you for killing him. Well, what did David say? He said, don't kill Absalom. That was his last words. Be gentle with my son. Okay? So that man, it said all the people had heard David give that command to these. So this man had evidently heard that command. And he says, and the man said unto Joab, though I should receive 1,000 shekels of silver in mine hand, yet would I not put forth mine hand against the king's son. Because he'd heard David's command or a request. For in our hearing the king charged thee and Abishai and Ittai, saying, beware that none touch the young man Absalom. So this man took that very seriously. He's going to obey David's request. Otherwise, I should have wrought falsehood against mine own life, for there is no matter hid from the king. Thou thyself wouldest have set thyself against me. In other words, he's saying nothing is kept from David. And even you would have told David how Absalom died and that I'm the one that killed him. And David would have been wroth or angry and it would have been the end of me. And so why would I want to kill Absalom? And said then Joab, I may not tarry thus with thee. And he took 3 darts in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak. And so Joab, well, we don't know if Joab really killed him or just injured him severely, but it says through the heart, so in the likelihood he killed him, but it also says more men came and shot Absalom again. But Joab was going to make sure that Absalom died. Joab also understood the insurrection that Absalom was bringing against David and was looking out for David. And remember, Absalom is Joab's cousin. He's his first cousin. But he kills or makes sure that Absalom is killed so that the insurrection will be stopped. I think that Joab also knew that if Absalom was dead, there was nobody else that would lead the northern kingdom against David. The whole thing was mounted by Absalom, and there wasn't another person that had Absalom's charisma to lead the people and get them to follow them like Absalom did, and so that the civil war would come to an end. And so this is what Joab did. Then it's interesting what verse 10, and 10 young men that bear Joab's armor compassed about and smote Absalom and slew him. And so we see that Joab threw the first darts, and then his armor bearers, or those that were closest to him, ended up making sure that Absalom was dead. Well, what happens next? And Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing after Israel, for Joab held back the people. Now, what does it mean that Joab blew the trumpet? The way that they communicated was with a trumpet. The trumpet would be a sheep's horn. And they, when you blew the trumpet, they'd give commands, because especially when you're in an area that's covered by woods, how are you going to be able to see a banner or see a flag? Or by the time you try and find everybody, when there's woods and trees all around, you're not going to be able to find him. But they also knew what the commands meant. And so when Joab blew the trumpet, this trumpet blow meant the people were to retreat and go back to where David was. And so they blew the trumpet. All of David's men that were under Joab and Ishi and Hittai, they all flew or left the battle and left fighting the people of Israel. And they took Absalom and cast him in a great pit in the wood and laid a very great heap of stones upon him, and all Israel fled, everyone to his tent. So they really didn't show Absalom any respect as far as making sure that, well, we're going to allow David to see Absalom one last time. No, they dug a pit, threw him in the pit, covered it with stones. And you see, that just like Joab thought, the minute Absalom was dead and Israel knew that Absalom was dead, they all fled. Because Absalom had been the one that was the charismatic leader that had talked them into fighting against David. And now they feared because David was still alive and David was their king. And what would David do to them who had come against him? And now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and reared up for himself a pillar, which is in the king's dale, and that is valley, the king's valley. For he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar after his own name, and it is called unto this day Absalom's place. This is another example of Absalom's pride. Another example of Absalom's arrogance. Absalom did have children, but they were all killed. And so he didn't have any living sons. And he wanted to be remembered. And he wanted to be revered. And so he built a pillar and put his name on it, Absalom's pillar, so that people will remember who he was. If you go to Israel today, we've been there three times. They've never taken us to Absalom's pillar. I don't even know for sure exactly where it's at. It's not one of the great tourist attractions of Israel. However, they will tell you where they believe David's tomb is in Jerusalem, and they'll take you to that. They'll talk to you about the city of David. They'll take you there. But they don't take you to Absalom's pillar. But this just shows the height of Absalom's arrogance and pride. You do not see David in his lifetime wanting to have a pillar resurrected to himself or anything done to honor his name. David always wanted the Lord's name honored. He wanted the people to honor God's name. And later on, when we get to the end of 2 Samuel and his last instructions to Solomon, he doesn't talk about, well, make sure you make a good name for yourself, son. No, he talks about Solomon and the Lord. And so David's perspective was the right perspective. Absalom's perspective was the world's perspective. How many people today do you have that want to have pillars and monuments made so that people remember who they are? But even if they put up a monument for you, how many people remember really who you are? Even in our own country, we have monuments to heroes from our Revolutionary War, from the Civil War, from politicians. And yet you ask, especially today where there is no history taught, who is this person? Well, I have no idea. And they're trying to tear pillars down and monuments down. So we see the difference in attitude, which was really the whole difference of what was motivating David and motivating his son. His son was motivated by the world and its philosophies, and David was motivated by God. So we see that Absalom had done that, but today nobody really makes a big deal of it. And verse 19, then said Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, let me now run and bear the king tidings how that the Lord hath avenged him of his enemies. And Joab said unto him, thou shalt not bear tidings this day, but thou shalt bear tidings another day. But this day thou shalt bear no tidings, because the king's son is dead. Then said Joab to Cushi, go tell the king what thou hast seen. And Cushi bowed himself unto Joab and ran. So he didn't want Ahimaaz to take the message, but he told Cushi to take the message. And it was because of the difference in what they were going to say. And then said Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, yet again to Joab, but however, let me, I pray thee, also run after Cushi. And Joab said, wherefore wilt thou run, my son, seeing that thou hast no tidings ready? But howsoever, said he, let me run. And he said unto him, run. Then Ahimaaz ran with the way of the plain and overran Cushi. So Ahimaaz was evidently faster and also knew a shortcut. So he gets ahead of Cushi, and he's going to arrive at David first. But it's going to be interesting as we look at messages that they bring. They're not exactly the same message. And it says, first of all, verse 23, but howsoever he said, verse 24. And David sat between two gates, and the watchman went up on the roof over the gate onto the wall, and lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man running alone. Now remember I said, what is the gates of the city? The gates of the city were where the elders of the city would sit and wait and do business. That's where David is sitting. He's sitting at the gates of the city. That's also the way that, by the way, that Absalom stole the hearts of the northern tribes. He got out to the gates before David did and deceived all the people, because they came to do business at the gates. Well, David is at the gates of the city where he's taken all the people, and he's waiting to determine what he should have his captains do next when they come and report. There's someone up on the wall who's a watchman. We're told to be watchmen on the wall so that we can see the events that are coming. The watchman would look out, and he would look for danger to come. He'd look for those who would be coming with messengers coming. And as he's looking out, he doesn't see the army of Israel coming, and he doesn't see the army of Joab coming, but he sees a lone runner coming. And so let's see what happens. And the watchman cried and told the king. And the king said, if he be alone, there is tidings in his mouth. And he came apace and drew near. And the watchman saw another man running. And the watchman called unto the porter and said, behold, another man running alone. And the king said, he also bringeth tidings. So he knew that these two men are bringing tidings, but they're not going to be probably the same tiding because they're coming at two different times. The first one, was Ahinamaz. He's outrun Cushi, and Cushi is the second one. And the watchman said, methinketh the running of the foremost is like the running of Ahinamaz, son of Zadok. And the king said, he is a good man, and cometh with good things. And so David had put trust in him. He was one of the guys that David had trusted with bringing him information of what was happening in Jerusalem. He trusted him, and he trusts his word. And Ahimaaz called and said unto the king, all is well. And he fell down on the earth upon his face before the king. And this is paying obeisance to David. And said unto him, Blessed be the Lord thy God, which hath delivered up the men that lifted up their hand against my lord the king. So he doesn't tell him that Absalom is killed. He's just saying that the victory has been Joab's, his brother, and David's other captain, that they've gained victory over Judah, that those who were coming against David have been defeated. But he doesn't tell him that Absalom is dead. And the king said, Is he, the young man Absalom, safe? And Ahinoaz answered, When Joab sent the king's servant and me, thy servant, I saw a great tumult, and I know not what it was. And so he's telling the truth. And this is one of the reasons that Joab didn't send him, because Ahinoaz hadn't seen Absalom killed. He just saw the battle going on, and he saw the fleeing of the soldiers from Israel, but he hadn't actually seen Absalom killed. He probably saw the struggle going on where Absalom was, but he hadn't actually been seen that. So he's not lying, and this is probably one of the reasons Joab didn't want to send him. Cushi had seen that event. He was there, and he was witness to it. And so that's why probably Joab wanted to send Cushi. And so David takes his word, and the king said unto him, Turn aside and stand here. And he turned aside and stood still. And behold, Cushi came, and Cushi said, Tidings, my lord the king, for the Lord hath avenged thee this day of all them that rose up against thee. And the king said unto Cushi, Is the young man Absalom safe? And Cushi answered, The enemies of my lord the king, and all that rise against thee to do thee hurt, be as that young man is. In other words, may all those that sought to usurp your kingdom be as Absalom. That told David Absalom's dead. Cushi had said that without so many words. He didn't exactly tell him how he died, but he told him he was dead. And Cushi had seen it, Cushi knew it, and Cushi told him. What is the response of David? And the king was much moved and went up the chamber over the gate and wept as he went. And thus he said, O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee. O Absalom, my son, my son. Even though his son was a rebel, David loved him. It shows the depth of God's love for us. Even though we were rebels, God died, sent Jesus to die for us. This was David's attitude towards his son. If he could have died for his son, he would have. And the depth of his compassion towards his son, even though his son had been the cause of all that was going on in the house of David. He had killed his brother. He's the one that set this whole series of events into motion. And it had been driven a lot by his pride and his total lack of calling on God and his lack of a forgiving heart, his lack of a desire to serve God and really a self-serving attitude. But yet David loved his son. And this gives us just a glimpse into the picture of, like I mentioned, how God loves us. And that when we're rebels, doing everything we can to usurp God's plans and to usurp God's authority, God still sent His Son to die for us. Let's just close in prayer. Lord, I pray that You would just help us to understand all of these events that transpired. Help us to understand that You're in control. You said that David would be the king through whose line Jesus would come. David expressed the attitude of Jesus on more than one occasion in humility, in love, in compassion, in desire to serve You. Lord, may we have that in our lives. And Lord, I pray that You would just help us to learn not to be like Absalom, filled with pride and arrogance and a rebel's heart, but to be like David and desire to serve the true and the living God. This we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. If you would turn with me in closing to hymn number 517. Does Jesus